Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us on Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmad. Good to be partnered up with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio. Good to partner with them as well. I'm on Twitter. You can beat me over the head. Shoot me your notes at Brad Sussmad, C-E-S-M-A-T. Pedro Gomez will join us in about 10 minutes. ESPN baseball analyst. The National View from Pedro. He's part of our team here at Sports360AZ.com. He joins us every Tuesday on the show. And obviously, we're going to talk about Tony La Russa and Pedro's view of the Tony La Russa move by the Diamondbacks. Good move, bad move, long-term implications. What is he hearing nationally? Of course, Pedro, a Valley resident, too, a big part of what we do here. Keith Baker is going to join us towards the end of hour number one, director of athletics over at Grand Canyon University. It's the end of year number one in Division One. I want to look back and a look ahead as to where GCU is at this point. And then Michael Delarusso will be with us. Michael Delarusso, the head coach of Arizona United SC. We'll talk to the coach as United get ready for Chivas coming in on Saturday on the pitch over at the Peoria Sports Complex. We talk and walk United. That's all coming up straight ahead. Senior Executive Vice President of Everything or Nothing, Eric Sorensen, is here with us. Did you hear about the DirecTV story today, right off the top?
I don't know if I heard the most recent update, but I did hear that AT&T, I believe, bought DirecTV.
So the thing is, I'm bringing this up right off the top because we have said all along, we are digital, digital, digital. That's where everything is going, is digital media. The days of racing home to watch me at 5:20 deliver sports, long, long gone. Newspapers, we see where they're going. That's, they get smaller and smaller, but digital continues to grow and grow and grow. It's now to the point where this morning it has come out that, and this impacts most everybody listening and watching this show, that AT&T, their bid to take over DirecTV, it will be at $48.5 billion, with a B, $48.5 billion.
Chump change.
The ability to watch TV anywhere is now AT&T's game plan, anywhere. They know that it's all going to your phone, that there was this whole trend of, I need my 90-inch plasma in my house, and now it's, you know what, people want to just go. And so today it's come out, the two chief executives, and the hang-up in all this is the NFL Sunday Ticket. This whole deal at $48.5 billion, a 20 million customer base. Some of you want to watch the Pac-12 network like Eric, who've never seen it. Let's just come over to my house.
Yeah, just randomly.
Yeah. And I bring this up right off the top because the NFL is having their owners' meetings. And this topic, if AT&T pulls it off, means that the Sunday Ticket would be available on your phone or wherever you go through AT&T and DirecTV. And that would change the way people, it's hard enough to get people to go into a stadium as it is now.
Yep.
Imagine it's 75 degrees in October and I can go watch the Cardinals play the Rams or I can take my boat out on the lake with my phone.
Yep.
That's where this is all going.
Yeah. Pull up the game on your iPad when you're out on Lake Powell in
right.
the next couple months.
That's so, it.
Pretty cool.
That's it. And so to me, that's the biggest sports story of the day. Now, it's not as sexy as the NBA draft lottery is tonight. It's not as interesting as the Diamondbacks going to St. Louis without Tony La Russa, by the way. He's smart enough to know, I think I'm going to go to Vegas and Visalia. Or Reno, I should say.
Correct.
Reno and Visalia.
Correct. But with this, Brad, there's always going to be a complication when you're talking about huge money transactions and big companies buying other big companies. So we'll see if they can actually push this across the finish line.
I would hope so. Because I'm kind of annoyed with DirecTV.
Yeah, but you know, we've been waiting so patiently for the Pac-12 network, and
yeah.
we're still waiting.
We're still waiting. Let's get you caught up on some things on my mind in the world of sports, and it's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, they've been with us since day number one, almost 3 years now. 3 years of Sports360AZ.com. And the Honda Resort and Casino behind us the whole way. They, of course, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains, you pull on down on the slots, you have some great winnings, you eat the great crab legs or the food that's being served at the Honda Resort and Casino in the buffet. You stay up there and you get out of the heat and the high temperatures and play some golf at the Pine Top Country Club or wherever it may be, Torreon, all those great golf courses up in the White Mountains. And you stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. It's just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains, the Honda Resort and Casino. Well, today is the draft lottery, and for the Suns, I think the Suns' story is becoming more and more interesting as we get into this offseason, because tonight they have very little shot. They have the lowest percentage of the lottery teams possible to end up getting the number one overall pick. They sent the Morris brothers back there, Marcus and Markeith, to be good luck charms. I don't know them to be good luck charms. I don't know that. If in fact, because in my way of looking at it, both those guys could be traded here in the offseason. Be kind of funny if they were the good luck charms that got them into the top three. The highest rated team out there with percentage tonight in the lottery is Milwaukee, followed by Philadelphia and Orlando. Milwaukee never has anything go right for them. And so I'm guessing that something random will happen. If the Lakers get the number one overall pick tonight, there will be more conspiracy theorists than ever, ever, saying it's fixed, it's rigged. But you have these big market teams like the Lakers in Boston sitting there tonight. You don't think the league would love to see Andrew Wiggins in a Celtics uniform? So it's very interesting to me to see how this plays out tonight. Today is also the start of Cardinals minicamp. The Cardinals open minicamp today, year two for Carson Palmer. And you take a look at what they've done in the offseason, and you'd say to yourself, self, it appears from my point of view that they're pretty much stronger in most positions than when they finish the season out. I say most positions because Carlos Dansby is no longer here, and anybody who wants to soft sell that is simply drinking the Kool-Aid. Eric and I are going to go out to the Cardinals facility after the show is over today, and we'll have much more to talk about with the Cardinals. But, you know, on the surface, Carson Palmer, can he stay healthy? Andre Ellington, was he a flash in the pan? Is he going to be durable enough to go through an entire, not 16-game schedule, as people like to say? You have these worthless rip-off preseason games where guys get hurt for no good reason at all. You have 16 regular season games, and then you get into the postseason. So really, you're looking at 21, 22 games overall that a guy like Ellington has to stay healthy. We have yet to see Larry Fitzgerald show any sign of decline. And yet, he's now at that magical age on the north side of 20, now into 30, that you look at and say, is that going to start to happen? Anybody who doesn't want to raise that up is not being truthful and honest about the situation. Yeah, Michael Floyd made a big push last year. Can he continue to make the big push? Ted Ginn, in my view, Ted Ginn has plenty of to prove here in Arizona. That's not a sold deal. I've been hearing about Rob Hausler forever. Okay, so let's just go right down the list here. Instead of waving the flag and saying, oh my gosh, they're going to win the NFC West this year, please, Bobby Massey, come through in a big way. Will we see a return in full of Tyrann Mathieu from injury? Let's not sit here and just start taking the pom-poms and saying everything's great. No, there's a lot of questions here. There's a lot of questions. Do I see answers? Absolutely I do. But we're in this day and age of let's get a click, so let's make sure that we're going to cheerlead the most possible, and let's not admit that there's some questions here. Kind of like the story in Cleveland. Brian Hoyer, the team's quarterback, the veteran who was here, and Johnny Manziel. Well, it's interesting. The general manager of the Browns says, quote, we don't want guys who are going to be warm and fuzzy, end quote. They're fighting for a job. It's somebody you're going to be working with. It's a unique situation. When you're competitive, you want that job. It's not going to be this warm and fuzzy thing. That, to me, is how you want your quarterback to be. So if it's not warm and fuzzy, I'm thinking Johnny Manziel is going to win hands down.
Hoyer is the definition, I believe, of warm and fuzzy.
So what I want to see is Johnny Manziel go over to Hoyer and just do the thing with the money right in front of him.
They have to play Johnny football.
I mean,
things are so bad in Cleveland, you likely won't have Josh Gordon, which is nothing good can come out of that. But
right,
just throw Johnny football in the fire. He'll figure it out.
I mean, it gives us something to talk about here in the offseason.
Sure.
But come on, when you have the front office saying we don't want warm and fuzzy, I don't want Carson Palmer to acknowledge Drew Stanton. That doesn't quite roll off the tongue as I don't want Brian Hoyer to be warm and fuzzy with Johnny Manziel. You know, Brian Hoyer was just tougher than Johnny. We couldn't find any way or shape or form to play Johnny this year. Brian Hoyer showed us that he has everything it takes. I mean, come on. let's be straight here with each other on this, rather than, well, we don't want them to be too friendly with one another. There's some other NFL stuff I want to get to in the show as well. Jerry Jones talking about the situation in Buffalo and also taking a shot at the players' union, because only Jerry Jones can do that. That's on my mind, too. But there is a ton of local stuff going on. On the other side, we'll talk with Pedro Gomez about the Diamondbacks and the Tony La Russa story, because, to me, that's where we are here in the Valley. That's the story, is moving forward. You can do mini camps in May all you want if you're the Cardinals. Get back to me when the regular season starts in September. Tony La Russa coming here, and we had Ken Kendrick on yesterday. I'm going to play Pedro some of these Ken Kendrick comments and see if he can sift his way through it, too. On Sports 360, AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365, at Sports360AZ.com. Time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Pedro Gomez joins us every week on the show, ESPN baseball analyst. He is home this week. Why are you not in St. Louis? Tony, why are you not in Reno or Visalia with Tony La Russa?
With Tony, he's going to be jumping around quite a bit, I think, in the next few weeks. His schedule will be interesting.
Okay, so
barnstorming almost.
Yeah. Let's get right into this right off the top. Your initial reaction to Tony La Russa was?
The Diamondbacks finally realized that they have been doing things incorrectly.
Are you being nice when you say incorrectly?
You can read in whatever you want, but they've made mistakes. They've made mistakes, Brad. There's no doubt that they have made mistakes, and it's not just the Kevin Towers regime. The Josh Burns regime is responsible for trading away Max Scherzer. So there's definitely been mistakes up and down the line. And the constant, by the way, throughout all of this has been Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall. So I think they finally realized, let's try a new approach, because what we've been doing obviously is not working. Because in Josh Burns, they had the sabermetric, analytical type of GM, and boom, they pushed him out the door. Then in Kevin Towers, they went back old school to the scouting type of general manager, and now boom, they're kind of doing a hybrid and in Tony La Russa.
Doesn't this set the organization back initially? Because am I wrong to think that Kevin's not going to be here much longer? I mean, they say he's going to be here, but come on. My point is, the regime is going to change again.
Well, when you get a new boss, the new boss tends to want to pick his underlings. So, with Tony La Russa, he is going to be involved in every single baseball decision. He is going to be the final decision on everything that comes up baseball related. I mean, his say will be final. So in that case, even though he doesn't carry the title of general manager, he's going to carry this title of kind of a czar over everything baseball related. And if you're a true general manager, you may not want to work for someone like that, mm-hmm. because you don't have truly final say. What they may end up doing is getting a general manager who is more of an administrative type of guy who will make sure that certain dates for, MLB purposes, contract dates, all the crossing of the T's, the dotting of the I's, that all of that is handled correctly. But in terms of Kevin Towers remaining, I would say that this probably does not bode well for his being here long term. That's not to say it can't happen, because if he's going to be okay working for Tony La Russa and having Tony make all the final say of decisions and not himself, then obviously he could stay here. But I would suspect that what we'll have is probably more of a general manager who is an administrative type of expert.
Pedro Gomez with us. I'm going to play you some of Ken Kendrick from yesterday. He came on with me, and I wanted to give him a couple of days because they won the press conference. You don't lose a press conference saying we're introducing Tony La Russa. So I asked him straight up, are you going to be buyers or sellers at the deadline? This was Ken Kendrick with me yesterday.
Tony is here now to evaluate. And if he comes back in and says, well, you know, here's what I think, and it means not being a seller, then that's the direction we will go. And I don't think we know, nor does he know, what his conclusions will say.
Now, this team, you can take the analysis here the next couple of weeks, but they're at 14-14 in the last 28 games, Pedro. They actually have played a little bit better. But I think that the owner acknowledged they don't have nearly enough pitching. So I'm going to assume they're going to be sellers. And I'm also going to assume that nothing's going to happen until the baseball draft is complete. Because, and correct me on this, if you blow Kevin out and you blow out the people within the scouting department or they leave before the draft, now you're really setting your team back. So to me, the timeline is about 3 weeks that Tony's going to evaluate. They're going to go through the draft. They're going to become sellers. And that's when we're going to see some things happen here. Is that about right from your view?
I don't think there's any way that that scenario doesn't play out because, yes, they're 14-14 in their last 28, but they've dug way too deep of a hole. And you and I talked about this, how you can absolutely lose a division race in April. And they did that. They've done that because of their horrid April.
And a wild card.
Exactly. Even the wild card. There's just way too many clubs. I mean, every club in the National League is ahead of them. So they would have a lot of climbing to do. And they just don't seem to have the starting pitching to be able to do that. And let's face it, at the end of the day, your club, the success you have always is dictated by the starting pitching. So when you don't have the type of starting pitching to be there at the end of the season, then you may as well look into trying to help yourself down the road. And that would create a seller's mentality. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Tony La Russa is a very smart baseball man. I covered him when I was an A's beat writer in the 90s for a good 7 to 10 years, both when I was a full-time beat writer and before that when I was the backup. And I've known him a long, long time. He knows when to cut his losses. And I think this is an organization that probably right now has to take a deep look in the mirror and say, in order for us to get better, we can't keep putting Band-Aids on things. We've got to just start, not necessarily from scratch, because there are pieces in the organization, but they've got to start from a very early standpoint. And it's tough. It's tough for fans to hear that because you don't want to wait around. But the reality is that right now, they've put themselves in this position.
ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez with Brad Sussmat. So my joke to Ken Kendrick jokingly was, you took all the money from Tanaka that you didn't get and you threw some of it at Tony. He wasn't very amused by that, by the way. But when you look at the Cardinals West, and he didn't like
I was, by the way.
Yeah, and he didn't like that assumption that this is Cardinals West. But when you have Dave Duncan going on MLB Network saying there aren't very many good arms within this organization, and that happened on Sunday, and you have Dave McKay sitting over there at first base, which to me makes a lot of sense down the road to be the next manager of this team, and you have Tony La Russa in place, there's nothing wrong with mimicking the success of St. Louis. Do you see that as I do?
There's no doubt. And let's not forget that when La Russa and Duncan and Walt Jocketty and even the trainer Barry Weinberg all got to St. Louis, that was viewed as Oakland East. Mm-hmm. And Oakland was coming off a stretch of about 8 years where they were the kingpins of baseball. So it's not unheard of. And you know, Kendrick may not enjoy hearing that, but in St. Louis, they heard the same thing, that, oh, this is just Oakland East. Well, look at the success that the Cardinals were able to parlay after Tony La Russa and Walt Jocketty and Dave McKay and Dave Duncan and all those guys arrived in St. Louis. The success of the Cardinals took off. Now, John Mozeliak, their current general manager, deserves a lot of credit for that as well. But let's not kid ourselves. There is something to this formula that obviously has worked twice, and the Diamondbacks are hoping that it works a third time. And I heard you say, you know, that maybe Dave McKay is the future manager. I'm going to throw out a name that maybe a lot of people aren't thinking of, the current bench coach of the St. Louis Cardinals, Mike Aldretti.
Yeah, well, that's a good name.
He's a guy that for La Russa.
Yeah.
He played for La Russa. He was a coach on La Russa's staff in St. Louis. And a lot of people think that he is somebody that is really, really ready. And should the Diamondbacks make a managerial move, I would not be surprised if Mike Aldretti's name was in there.
I talked to a couple of baseball guys yesterday who said one scenario that they can see happening in relatively short order within the next year is Josh Burns leaving San Diego. He's under the gun under there already. And that Kevin returns to San Diego in a triumphant return. Do you see that as a possibility?
Oh, anything can happen. Absolutely. I mean, Power's greatest success was in San Diego.
Right.
He's a very, very popular figure in that city. And absolutely, that there's no doubt that that scenario could play itself out. And I think everybody would be happy if it did. Powers, San Diego, the Padres fans, everybody.
Yeah,
so no doubt that could.
There's a lot that's buzzing around since this move was made. So on the field, though, do we immediately see here in the next month that they finally say, Archie Bradley, it's time to come up? Well, they've kept him down there to not get his clock ticking. So I think that's going to happen in the next month, assuming he's healthy.
Exactly, because I know that right now he's not healthy.
Right, right.
I mean, at some point this season, you've got to see what Archie Bradley can do at this level. It's no longer about being at AA or AAA. It's about, okay, if you're going to be on the staff next season, which by all indications, Archie Bradley will be a member of the five-man rotation next year, then why not indoctrinate him this year so that next year is not just throwing him into the deep end of the pool? So give him two to 3 months at the big league level this year and let him start learning. Let him start learning what it's like to get major league hitters out, because it's completely different than at the minor league level.
Is La Russa like that, though, Pedro? You know, Chase Anderson was brought up. That's total Kevin Towers move of bringing up guys early on in the season. That's what he's always done, is brought up young arms. And he's had some good success. Is La Russa like that, though? Would La Russa bring him up this year?
Absolutely. If you are the best available arm in the organization, yes. I remember back in, I think it was 92, maybe 93, the A's had those four. They were called the four aces when Todd Van Poppel was picked. Now, Van Poppel was not ready, but another one of those draft picks, Kirk Dressendorfer, out of the University of Texas, came, and he was lights out in spring training, and he ended up making the rotation out of spring training, much like Mike Leake did with the Reds a couple of years ago.
Yep.
So La Russa is not at all adverse to saying, if you're the best guy for the job, you are going to play. He's always been that way. He's not a guy who's going to tread lightly on people's feelings. He knows that at the major league level, and this was taught to me a long time ago, it's a do league, not a try hard league. And that's, La Russa abides by that mantra. And he knows that, hey, I don't care what you've done for me. It's about who can do the best job for me right now. And that's how La Russa has always operated.
A couple other questions. So I asked Ken Kendrick yesterday, will you rule out Tony La Russa ever managing? And he hemmed and hawed and stammered around for a little bit and said, really, it's Tony's call, that he can't see that, but it would be ultimately Tony. Do you see that?
I don't. There was a time when I did see that after he retired from the Cardinals in 2011, and I thought, oh, within 2 years, his competitive juices will just overtake him, because I know how he is. It's all about the competition. And but this position will allow him to still compete, not in the dugout. I can't say no for certain, because you can never say never.
Sure.
But I think that probably has passed, and I don't believe that La Russa will step back into the dugout.
Last question: what is the downside to all of this?
Well, the downside is that if you remember when Tommy Lasorda kind of became the Dodgers interim general manager, and he thought he knew everything there was about being a front office guy, and he quickly discovered that it was not nearly as easy as it seems like from the outside. And you start to make administrative errors. If you remember, the Dodgers traded with the Reds for Jeff Shaw to become their closer, and he had 3 years left on his contract. And Lasorda didn't realize that when you trade for a player in the middle of a multi-year deal, that player has the option of opting out of that contract and becoming a free agent. So it ended up costing the Dodgers tens of millions more to keep Jeff Shaw. And I remember Lasorda saying, well, talking to the then Reds GM, Jim Bowden, saying, well, why didn't you tell me about this? And Bowden's response was, it's not my responsibility to tell you about that. So the downside is that these type of clerical errors could take place, and they could hurt the organization without a doubt. But I think everybody in baseball kind of learned from that, and that's why when I say that they're going to have somebody here who is an administrative guy, and even if they keep Towers until the end of the season, Towers would never allow that type of a mistake to be made by the front office. So the downside is that mistakes are made, and it ends up costing the Diamondbacks mistakes, like dumb mistakes like that. But in terms of the downside, hey, I mean, LaRusso's not always been the easiest guy to work for. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how he, you know, Ken Kendrick, we know, is a strong personality. He likes to be involved and likes to have the final say on every decision. Let's see if when it comes time to really cut bait, will Kendrick say, okay, Tony, it's your call, whatever you say goes, or will Kendrick step in and meddle and say, wait, I want to have final say on this one. And that could hurt. That could hurt, because at that point, LaRusso might say, you know what, this isn't what I agreed to. This isn't what I signed up for. I'm out of here.
Let you go off that. Appreciate the time and the insight as always. Good stuff today. Thanks.
Okay, Brett.
There's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, for a couple of minutes, more than a couple of minutes. That's about as good as it's going to get on the inside of what's going on over there. Really good. On the other side, so I've got some stuff on my mind about the lottery tonight and the Suns I want to get to. And also some NFL things that are moving around as we speak in the middle of the day. In about 15 minutes, Keith Baker, director of athletics, Grand Canyon University, talk to the Lopes. Our final visit with Keith for the year as they wrap up the first season in Division I. I want to get a feel from him where the direction of the sports teams are heading. Michael De La Russo will be with us too. Michael De La Russo, the head coach at AZ United SCs. We'll talk to him in about 30 minutes. I'm Brad Sussman.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
This segment of the Brad Sussmat Show brought to you by Bison Realty and Bison Homes, real estate services in the White Mountains. Looking for that summer home in Pine Top, Heber Obergard, Springerville, Sholo, or Holbrook. You're here in the Valley, you want that summer home. A lot of you are looking for that right now. Just call Jay 928-242-6890, 928-242-6890. Licensed realtor by the state of Arizona, 928-242-6890. Bison Realty, Bison Homes, Brad Sussmat, Sports360AZ.com, Arizona-Arizona-Arizona-centric. Partnered up with the Arizona Republic, AZCentralSports.com. Appreciate the Republic and the partnership. White Mountain Radio, good to be on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Tonight, Packard Stadium has their final game over at Arizona State. And so I know the ASU baseball folks are excited for that tonight, and there'll be some sad moments. There's a great story up on Sports 360 AZ right now about a pine tar incident with Barry Bonds in a Sun Devil uniform that if you're a baseball fan, just an Arizona sports fan, that's what we do. The old video and all that of Barry Bonds getting in trouble for a pine tar bat over at Packard Stadium. The late Jim Brock is in there and all that. It's a very good story. So tonight they'll close down Packard Stadium. They'll move over to Phoenix Muni next year where they'll be able to sell beer. As one person at ASU said, we're going to be able to sell beer and push the reset button and move on. And that'll be fine. I'm curious as to what's going to happen to that piece of property. It's kind of funny. Eric, did you see that Bond story, by the way?
I did. Yeah.
So you notice on that story that Rural Road is not even there.
No.
Not even there in that video.
Not even there. You just hit the ball and it just goes.
It's like this dirt, this field that's sitting out there.
And it wasn't that long ago, believe it or not.
No, it wasn't that long ago. And Bonds looks like a toothpick.
Hmm.
You know,
that story just kind of told itself.
Yeah.
As the years progressed.
Kind of random about that.
And his head got much bigger,
larger, very large.
Yeah, so. Man, that's a big head.
The stadium down in Dallas or in Texas that you went and did this piece on Todd Graham's high school, right?
It's not his it's not his alma mater, but it's really where Todd Graham kind of put his fingerprint on his coaching career. Allen High School is in the Metroplex. It's about 20 miles north of Dallas.
Right.
And they opened a $60 million brand new state-of-the-art, only can happen in Texas football facility.
$60 million.
Yep, 2 years ago, 2012 it opened. One problem.
Yeah.
We've got some cracks in the cement, and it will not be open this fall.
yeah.
So they'll have to go and play one of the other district's high school stadiums, which only hold like 35,000
people. That's it.
Instead of 55,000 people.
And it only costs $10 million to build that
something facility. Something like that.
You know that's going to come to Arizona.
Most likely.
Because we already see that with Chaparral building their field house. And and I always laugh at that stuff. You know, a guy will come up to me, big cigar booster, and he'll say, well, my kid goes to Chaparral and your recruiting roundup should do something on him. Yeah, that's great. Why don't you go see what they've got to work with over at Casa Grande High School? Why don't you see what they have to work with over at, I don't know, South Mountain High School? Maybe you might want to go over to Maryville High School and take care of their fields and build them a field house rather than you having your $5 million, yeah. $6 million, your monthly payment of around $10,000 to pay it back, your apartments across the street where players live. You know,
yes.
Maybe if you're one of these football powers here, rather than brag it up and want us to come do a story on how great you are, how about you go back and give to some of these programs that aren't as good?
The one thing I'd like to see, Brad, here in Phoenix,
yeah.
if possible, and I know it's a stretch, I'd love to see all the schools get field turf because it's just so much safer and healthier and cooler. And I know it's expensive. I get it. But all the Paradise Valley schools have it. Most of the Scottsdale schools have it now. And I think that's the direction in high school football that you're going to see. The players love playing on it. So,
but see, this stadium in Texas, I get it that everybody wants to have – they're the biggest – they're the guy that wants to show off how great they are, and that's how they justify their existence by, look at how big our stadium is. Well, guess what? Your stadium blows.
And it's okay? A very affluent neighborhood.
Sure.
A lot like the people that live up in North Scottsdale that go to Chaparral.
Well, but see, I'm not just picking on Chaparral, okay? Coronado High School in Scottsdale doesn't have a football coach yet. They can't even afford to get a coach in place. So there's kids that are going into their senior year that I'm sure they'd love field turf. I'm sure they would. And there's kids that you look at programs around the valley or even around the state and say, we could be so much better if we took all of our resources and helped out. Well, that's just how it is. That's society in general. The kid over at Coronado, he grew up unlucky. It's the trading places way of life. A $60 million high school stadium, and it's got cracks in it. That's terrific. I love that story. That's on my mind today. The other thing is about training camp and the Cardinals and mini camps and all this off-season calendar stuff. I actually believe that you do have to have an off-season, that this whole deal of, well, just show up and when they get into training camp in late July. I hate preseason football. It's one of the worst parts of all of sports. Charging people to see guys that are going to be digging ditches or trying to stay healthy. And there's nothing wrong with digging ditches, but you don't pay to watch them do that. So I'm actually fine with them having these workouts in May. I'm fine with it. Some people think the off season is just entirely too long and it's too much responsibility. And it's too much this and it's too much that. And with the concussion issue, it may well be cut back. But I'm fine. Today we're going to go stand on the sidelines and we're going to watch some guys run around at the Cardinals facility and they're going to work on some things that need to be worked on. I'm good with that. What I'm not good with is when it gets to be 5 weeks in August of just stuff that's nonsensical, of people going into battle. And I know some of you military people hate it when I use it that way, but that's what they're doing. They're throwing their bodies around for nothing. Yeah, they get a check, but that's about it. Super Bowl 52. There is a bit of a concern here on my end about the Arizona Super Bowl. Okay. Super Bowl's here next January. It's my understanding, I've heard around town, that the fundraising isn't going quite as well as they thought that it would. Now, Super Bowl 52 is coming up. Minnesota, New Orleans, Indianapolis are all putting in and going after Super Bowl 52. I saw a couple of stories here today looking ahead to upcoming Super Bowls. San Diego, if they get their act together to get a Super Bowl, Arizona is going to have some competition. And we've had a nice run here of getting Super Bowls. And I like having the big ticket events. And having the big ticket events is great for everybody. But we got to be really smart and careful here in Arizona. And when I say we, it's got to be media. Guys, we got to be on top of this stuff. Got to call out some people or follow this through because having Super Bowls here is great for everybody. And I really believe Arizona could fall out of the rotation if there aren't new facilities. I'm not saying a new stadium in Glendale, But I'm saying upkeep of facilities, making sure the infrastructure is in place. The owners are looking at Minnesota, New Orleans, and Indianapolis. What do they have outside of New Orleans? I get New Orleans. But seriously, Minnesota and Indianapolis over us? On the other side, Keith Baker, athletic director at Grand Canyon University. Always good to talk to Keith. Year one in the books at Division One. We'll get a look back. That's next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Brad Sussmat on Sports 360 AZ on AZ Central Sports. Going to be partnered with the Arizona Republic day in and day out. White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. Spotlight for a couple of minutes. Time to talk to the Lopes. Keith Baker, director of athletics at Grand Canyon University. As we come to the end of year number one in Division One, they're still not completely done yet. The baseball team last night played USC. They play UC Riverside tonight. There's some other events still going on, but for the most part, we figured let's take a look back at year number one through Keith's eyes. The measure of success, what can you gauge? How can you gauge how successful the overall athletic department was in year one of Division One, Keith?
Well, you know, that's a very, very good question, Brad, and one that we were not 100% sure about as we entered year one of, you know, is it a thing where you look solely at the on-court, on-field style performance of each of the teams? Do we look at how the athletes adapted into a format, especially with the schedules we played this year, where we were going to be traveling a lot more, missing more class, and we would put some academic support areas in place, and seeing how the students handled that that little bit of added adversity to, or little bit of difficulty anyway, in terms of their just handling their day-to-day schedules. And then also just that idea of the heightened sense of notoriety, you know, people talk a little all the time about just the little things like, hey, I saw your scores on the ticker on the bottom of ESPN and that sort of thing. And so with those kind of things, yes, it's kind of fun, but it brings that added weight of, well, if you're going to have your name out there, is it going to be worth looking at, and are people going to be interested, and are you going to perform well?
Sure.
So we tried to roll a lot of those things in together and figure out exactly how we were progressing through to take it really a season at a time, fall, winter, spring, kind of reassess and reevaluate as we were going through. And at the end of the semester this year, there's a fairly good feeling about how things have gone. Our athletes have performed well in the classroom. They've certainly done probably a lot better than we might have expected they would do within the Western Athletic Conference itself. So we're very pleased at this particular point and looking very much forward to what's going to happen next year in year two.
Keith Baker, GCU Director of Athletics, with Brad Sussmat for a couple of minutes. Program that opened the eyes the most, that at the start of the year you have all these teams. And yeah, it's pretty easy to sit here and talk about the basketball program. We'll get to that in a minute. But a program that opened the eyes within the department or on the campus said, wow, this is much better than we thought, or there's more participation. Give me that program.
You know, there's probably not a single one. Several of the sports had individual highlights. You know, obviously men's and women's basketball, both with their third place finishes in their conference respectively, was a big highlight for us, especially when you look and both of them suffered some personnel losses at some point in the year due to injury or other reasons that caused them to have to shift gears, rely on people they hadn't planned on before. So that was very, very pleasing, and I think a little bit of a surprise as we moved into the conference play that the teams did as well as they did. I think in one respect, the first big wake-up call in terms of overall came in from women's track and field on the indoor side, you know, winning a conference championship in that first year out there. We did have kind of a perfect storm with some great upperclassmen leadership on our track and field program that helped solidify that for us. But that was that first big awakening to, hey, maybe we've got a chance to be competitive earlier than we may have thought we would. And when the spring sports rolled in, it really became evident that that's always been one of our hallmark strengths of our athletic program, is because of the great weather you get here in the spring, because of the winter weather where student athletes have access to facilities and can train year round. That's the season that really helps us. And when you talk about men's and women's golf, the tennis programs, the outdoor track and field teams, baseball and softball, they all did exceedingly well. And for softball to win a regular season championship it was just phenomenal to go through the course of a season within the Western Athletic Conference and to meet the challenges that came before them and to come out number one in the conference in that first year was a great deal. And then baseball finishing second. I mean, all of these teams, when the coaches' polls came out, they were all fairly well down in the standings as far as the conference expectation was concerned. And for our student athletes to step up the way they did, for them to get the leadership from the coaching staff, for our athletic training and strength and conditioning staff to step up and make those kids ready for competition and available, it was just, I guess I would have to note all of those as being big eye-openers for us.
Fair enough, fair enough. And it's a wide-ranging question. We're talking with Keith Baker, GCU Director of Athletics, Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ, on AZ Central Sports as well. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic, White Mountain Radio, across the great state of Arizona, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat. For basketball, so progress under Dan Marley, if we're talking about Dan in year one and where the program is, even as we're talking here in late May with kids coming in, transferring in, weeding out some. It's a day and age where you can have a set player roster and 4 years later it's completely different. That's just the day and age we live in. I myself saw a lot of progress, not only on the court with Dan as coaching and building a team, but also off the court with the buzz and the national notoriety. How about you?
You know, very much so. To see Dan and how he came through this year, I mean, he was very upfront and honest with me when he got the job and right out of the chute said, you know, I've been a pro guy for 25 years and haven't been in the college game and really sought out support from other collegiate coaches that he wanted to bring in and put on his staff. And so I give his staff a lot of credit for helping through this first year of acclimating Dan to just the way things work at the collegiate level. I think that was a very, very important thing for him to adapt and to be able to take this in a new environment. You're right, basketball has become a highly mobile sport in terms of transferring in terms of that, and the NCAA is now looking at those situations of the seniors who graduate and still have a season of competition and then can go without restriction into another school and participate. That's becoming more and more prevalent in Division I basketball. So all of those things can really help shift and change a roster very, very quickly. We've got some big holes to fill, and the coaching staff is well aware of that and obviously out beating the bushes trying to make sure that they have the personnel in place to have another successful run next year.
Yeah, and Trent May had a terrific year, too, on the women's side. I mean, both your basketball programs, I think, are clearly in the right direction, and Dan gets a contract, Coach May gets a contract extension, too, and I think both of those are heading in the right direction. A couple other questions before I let you go. Conference affiliation, how did the WAC work in year one for GCU? Because, Keith, from my view, in just a year's point in time, Grand Canyon University has become, in my opinion, the most important member of that conference. You have the biggest television market, the marketing dollars that are spent nationally and globally around where GCU is. And this isn't to talk badly about any of the other schools, but the facilities that are in place, I just think that you've come into a conference where they really have benefited from having GCU in place.
Well, and we hope that that is the case. That was one of, President Mueller from the outset of our membership in the Western Athletic Conference, knowing the restrictions that were in place with regard to us for postseason play and the opportunity for postseason play not being there. President Mueller really accentuated to our coaches, to our athletics administration, as we work within the Western Athletic Conference, to be a high-quality member that brings something to the table, even in this restricted time period. And so we did things last year, like hosted the WAC Volleyball Championships as a neutral site situation, and our staff was very, very much involved in that opportunity. And so GCU Arena had that. We're having some preliminary discussion right now with the WAC. It's nowhere near a done deal. The administrators discussed it a little bit, but there is a potential that the WAC Basketball Championship would consider coming here as a neutral site for a couple of years as we start to. And that would be really a big move if the WAC were to leave Las Vegas, where they've been for the last few years. But The WAC is really reemerging and trying to re-identify itself as a conference with so many new members and such a wide disparity in the geographic presentation that's out there that we really have to look at some new ways to do things. So do we see ourselves as a, I guess you would almost say, a prominent member of the conference? We would try to look at ourselves in that way, not in a way to brag about anything, but in a way to be of benefit to the league and to help this league grow and emerge and gain strength over the course of the time while we are reclassifying.
Keith, before I let you go, we're talking with Keith Baker, Director of Athletics, GCU. I've got about a minute and a half. The question I get when I'm out doing the rubber chicken circuit or doing the show or email or any of those things is, what's going to happen with GCU scheduling ASU and scheduling U of A? And my answer on the rubber chicken circuit is, this is above the athletic director's spot. I'm not putting you on the spot here, but I just think that's true, isn't it? This is a Brian Mueller, Michael Crow, if we're just talking about ASU and GCU playing one another, because the benefits to me, I would think every coach and every athletic director would want to see these two schools, and U of A as well with Greg Byrne, play one another for travel costs and being able to get around. Where are you at on this one?
I would agree with you that there are a lot of advantages to both of the institutions. Obviously, there's a great advantage for us in playing those institutions. From a competitive standpoint, as we're reclassifying, there's probably not as much of an advantage for ASVU or U of A to play us. But I would also think your assessment is correct in that it's not a decision made at that particular level at this point. That the decision is pretty much above athletics, and it's more institutionally driven in terms of making that choice. Many of our coaches have very, very good working relationships with athletic department staff at Arizona State and at University of Arizona. And even our support staffs, from academic services to our compliance staffs, we communicate regularly with other institutions within the state and have very productive sharing of information and exchange of information, of strategy, of how to best serve and service our student athletes. So that those types of discussion do go on, and those are beneficial for our kids. I think they're probably beneficial in some way for the staffs that serve those kids on those other campuses as well. So I would hope that at some point in the years to come that, we could have that conference and have that discussion in a down-to-earth and rational standpoint and just see what could happen. But, certain things are a little bit above my reach at this particular point, but I've had the opportunity to very, very quickly meet Ray Anderson and really was positively impacted by meeting him. Seems like a great leader and somebody who's going to do good things with Arizona State University. And, of course, Greg Byrne's been around for years, and I've always looked up to the things that he does and the leadership that he has there. And we do have conversations from time to time on things. But we would love it to be able to extend beyond that and to have that dialogue open. But, we have what we have, and we will do our very, very best to be representatives of Grand Canyon with what we can do at this particular point.
I appreciate your time, as always, throughout the year. Enjoy your summer. We'll talk in the fall. Thanks.
Hey, Brad. Thank you.
Here's Keith Baker with us, GCU Director of Athletics, on a recap of year number one in Division One. Sports 360, AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Off we go into hour number two on Sports 360, AZ.com, on AZ Central Sports. Good to partner with the Arizona Republic on White Mountain Radio across the great state of Arizona and on Twitter, at Brad Sussmat. Welcome to the show. Good Tuesday. In a couple of moments, talk to the coach. Michael Dello Russo will be with us for a couple of minutes as we talk United. That's in a couple of minutes. Arizona United SC coming up with Chivas this coming Saturday out at the Peoria Sports Complex. Some of what's going on in my mind in the world of sports brought to you by Gateway Airport, where it is just plain easy. Fly in and out of Gateway to nearly 40 locations. Gateway Airport, it is just plain easy in South Mesa. Gateway Airport, love flying out of Gateway. You get to Vegas, get up to San Francisco, over to Chicago, flying to Rockford. Pretty simple. It's Gateway Airport. Tonight is the NBA Draft Lottery. The Suns have the smallest opportunity of coming up with the number one overall pick. That goes to Milwaukee. Last night, Spurs beat up on Oklahoma City, and the game wasn't even that close. Tonight, I got to put up with Indiana. It was just painful to watch against Miami. That's going on. We'll be out at the Cardinals after today's show. The Cardinals open training camp, mini camp, rather. That is today. We'll see Carson Palmer and company. That out at the Cardinals facility in Tempe. And, of course, tonight we have the Diamondbacks on the road at St. Louis against the Cardinals. No Tony La Russa. La Russa in Reno and in Visalia. Very smart. I mean, imagine Tony La Russa showing up in St. Louis with everything that he'd done there, now in charge of running the Diamondbacks as of over the weekend. That would just be a crazy scene. Some of what is on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by Gateway Airport. Gateway Airport, it is just plain easy. Let's talk United for a couple of minutes. Michael Delarusso, head coach, Arizona United SC, coming off a 1-0, coming up short against Orlando City. I think probably, coach, most frustrating loss so far in the early going. You can never take a loss well, but that one really had to be painful, I would think, for you because you had so many opportunities in the match.
Yeah, it was a tough one, Brad. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I'm great, coach. Thanks for coming on board.
Of course, yeah. It was tough. You know, I was happy with our boys overall, but still we're looking to get better. And that game, you know, I think we can learn a lot from it, which is nice.
Today, as you and I are talking right now, the United States men's national team is scrimmaging against Galaxy 2. That's going on a pre-World Cup camp up at Stanford. That's got to be good for the league. You've played Galaxy 2, and I would think for those in the USL Pro that United is part of, this is a good day for the league, is it not?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's just one step that this league's looking to take, and that's going to be a great experience for those young gentlemen, for sure.
And do you talk to your soccer guys around the community and the people at the Galaxy today, tonight, this week, about what did you see, what did you like, what didn't you like?
I'm not sure. I'm a little closer with some of the guys on the national team, actually. So maybe I'll ask them, look for a little insight on LA Galaxy. So I'm a little bit more prepared when we play them next time. But no, I think, you know, I'll touch base with LA maybe next week sometime and just see what the experience is like because, you know, it's going to be great for those guys.
What is your concern about the USA World Cup team?
Not sure. Obviously, we're in a tough group. You know, getting the guys that Jurgen wants and kind of, you know, it's tough because most of these guys in that camp right now have no idea if they're going to get selected or not. There's, you know, 30 guys in, and I would say 10 to 15 are pretty sure they're getting picked. But they're still in, you know, a tryout phase, which, you know, I think that might be the toughest part is, you know, Jurgen's got to pick his team so they can go ahead and, you know, get all on the same page and get used to each other. And I know they all know each other pretty well, but, you know, just get the team going.
Because I'm getting a lot of questions now with World Cup right around the corner as to how the team's going to look. I don't know. You know, I know that they're in a very tough group that you and I talked about last week, and I don't want to beat that into the ground. But in this period leading up here in these next couple of weeks, I think that there's a curiosity factor, Michael, about just how this roster is going to shape up.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of uncertainties. You know, a big question mark for them is, you know, what they're going to do in their back line. So, you know, Jurgen has his thoughts. I'm not sure really where it's at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have a young guy, I know, Omar Gonzalez, who just got hurt recently. You have a couple of experienced guys. You have another young guy in Matt Beisler. But kind of who's going to pair together and who's going to be the best at center back. And then on top of that, you know, you have a big question mark at right back. You have three guys kind of competing for that spot. So it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, Jurgen's a guy that gives guys opportunities that are, you know, playing well at the moment. So I'm not sure how camp's going. So we'll just kind of see from there.
Okay, who are the guys you're close with? Are you going to divulge that?
I mean, obviously guys that I went to Maryland with. Clarence and I were roommates for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Goodson, Omar and I, Graham, Susie, Mo, and then I know some of the other guys that play in the league, just playing against them. I would say I'm more acquaintances with a lot of them. So.
No, that's cool.
It's a good group of guys, so it's nice to see them growing. And I think this year it's probably the most competitive 30 going for those 23 spots, which is also nice to see.
I'm curious on your end. So Orlando City undefeated, and you come close, and we talked about it just a little bit off the top, but when you look back on a match like that, what do you tell your guys? Because you had so many close opportunities. You said it's a good learning experience. Exactly what do you take away from that? Because on one hand, Michael, I'm getting notes of what a great showing by the group. On the other hand, I get, well, they came close, but close doesn't count in the standings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. We're not overly concentrated on results right now. Obviously, I stress that I like to win and I hate to lose. I think that's pretty well known by now. But at the same time, that's not going to be the deciding factor of our team's success, at least not right now. I keep stressing that we want to get better. Obviously, getting cleaner in the attacking third is kind of, you know, where every team is looking to improve. And, you know, we'll address those issues. I also want to get better defensively, though. We had a couple breakdowns. We weren't as organized as I'd like to be. But it's not, you know, they're not major fixes. They're just a little, couple little tweaks here and there of tactical understanding from some individuals and, you know, everybody as a group. But overall, I was, you know, after going back and watching the game, I thought we had even better of the play than I thought on the night. You know, we possessed the ball pretty well. But at the same time, I want to be a better possession coach. I always do. So, there's a lot to take from it, so hopefully we'll just learn from it and get better.
You have a lot of positives going forward. Michael Dello Russo with us, head coach, Arizona United SC. They play this Saturday night at the Peoria Sports Complex against Chivas USA. Plenty of tickets available. Should be a great showing by the fans all around the Valley, having Chivas come on in. That is this coming Saturday night. And then the following week, on the 28th, it's the Lamar Hunt Trophy. Lamar Trophy, let's focus on that for a second. You have OKC Energy coming in on the 28th, and you get through the first round. We have not talked since you're showing up in Portland. What does the Lamar Hunt Trophy mean for the soccer fans following United for you to just get to this point and maybe even beyond?
It's a great tournament where you can, you know, see where you're at across the country. It's our only quote-unquote national championship for professional sports, at least for professional soccer. So, you know, it was great going up to Portland. I got to see a lot of the guys' character come out, which was nice, and now we get to, you know, host OKC, who's a great team. You know, we played them earlier in the year. But also, this is a great measuring stick for our guys individually, and it's a great opportunity for a club like ours to try to find success and get our name out there. You know, a lot of USL teams have had success in the past, and that's kind of springboard them on to bigger and better. So, you know, we obviously just want to take it game by game, but we understand the overall importance of it.
And before I let you go, a quick thought on Chivas this Saturday night.
They're a good team. I don't know who they're going to bring. That's the biggest question mark with the MLS reserve teams. I know they don't play. Their first team doesn't have a game this week. They don't play until the following Wednesday. So they could get some of their guys, you know, their first team guys that, you know, don't see that many minutes. I'm not sure. But they're a good team. They play pretty good soccer. They're doing pretty well right now, their first team. I know their reserves haven't had the best results, but then again, like I said, we don't know who they're going to bring. Mm-hmm. We kind of know how they play tactically. So, you know, I've seen a couple games of theirs, and our guys will be as prepared as possible. So we look forward to it, though. It should be a good game.
I'll see you on Saturday night. Appreciate the time and the visit every week. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you, Brad. Take care.
You too. Michael Dello Russo there, head coach, Arizona United SC.